Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 183 of the Free Cities Podcast. Hello, yes. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Lovely to have you here. Always happy to see you. And I've got a great guest for you this week. Do you know what? We haven't had a Bitcoin-related show for ages, it seems. So it's time for another one. My guest this week is Tomek Kawaczyk. Oh, it's a Polish name. You know I'm not that great with names. And that's why we tend to call Tomek Tomek K, as he will be known from now on. Tomek, he's a Pole, as you can imagine from the name, a longtime libertarian activist and the man behind the Bitcoin District in Prospera. Bit of backstory, Tomek has spent many years organizing at the intersection of Bitcoin and the freedom movement. He runs the Bitcoin Film Festival in Warsaw, now in its fourth year. And by his own account, the first of its kind in the world. I actually attended the first ever one. And that was, I think that was where me and Tomek first met. Anyway, Tomek, about a year ago, he came to visit Prospera. Like many people, he heard what was going on there. And if you don't know what Prospera is, you don't listen to this show enough. I'm not going to go into that at the moment. On his second day in Prospera, he bought a motorbike from Facebook Marketplace to basically lock in the decision to move there. And he's been on the island ever since. What he's building is called the Bitcoin District. The flagship part is called Orangeville, which is a wooden modular Bitcoin neighborhood climbing up the side of a jungle valley, with funding secured for a first phase of over a dozen apartments. And around this sort of physical manifestation sits a calendar of events. Most well known, BitChill, which is a quarterly Caribbean Bitcoin retreat where Bitcoiners go and stay in Prospera. And there's a very active itinerary over that time. There's also the Bitcoin Vibe Camp. There's a hackathon coming in August. There's even poker tournaments with BTC as prizes. It's a great scene there in Prospera. Beyond the district in Prospera itself, Tomek's part of a broader coalition promoting Bitcoin on the island of Roatan itself, which has helped onboard around 60 merchants so far on the island, and also recently renovated Roatan's largest sports arena, which is now called the Bitcoin Arena. It was kicked off by an international basketball tournament. Tomek's bet, of course, is that this little island in the Caribbean can become the most Bitcoin-dense place in the world. We sat down in Prospera and we talked about a lot of stuff, and a few things besides the Bitcoin Film Festival and the strange new subgenre of Satoshi Nakamoto movies that's just coming out. What happens to the Satoshi coins if quantum computing arrives? That's the million odd coins mined by Satoshi back in the day. Whether Michael Saylor's bet will play out for the better? It's a contentious one. Why neither of us would accept the job of king of the world, and what it's actually like to live in a startup city that still only has about 200 people. Lots of great insights here, talking of small communities of freedom-oriented people. Boom, boom. May I introduce you to our wonderful sponsors, Veritas Villages. They're building energy self-sufficient communities in Latin America for freedom lovers just like you. They're intentional communities full of freedom lovers. And I've just watched a great new video of the progress in their Coronado project in Panama. Lots of buildings going up there. It's amazing to watch it all come together in such a beautiful location. That one's in the highlands of Panama, yet a short drive to world-class surfing beaches. What is not to like, people? www.veritasvillages.com/freecities. Please do the forward slash bit. They've got communities in other parts of Central America too. So go and check them out if you're interested in what they're doing, or if you want to become a resident, or if you're a Bitcoiner too. They accept Bitcoin at all their villages. And also, you can pay for your property with Bitcoin too. Good one for the Bitcoiners there, which I know you're listening because Tomek's on. Anyway, time for the value for value top five. Who's giving the most Bitcoin to the show? Here they are in first place. And this guy, he's the new greatest of all time here. He keeps topping the charts. That's Anon Anon. He's number one. Another person we see a lot near the top, Shadrach. He's number two. Then Set in Stone. Then Darcy. Then Christopher Albanese. Many thanks to everyone donating on your value for value platforms. A few comments as well, all about the Lucy Connolly episode from last week. Anon Anon, it says, insane story. It was Justin Bianchi jailed for tweets with a kind of bemused emoji, like we all are. Yes, totally insane situation going on. Unfortunately for me to say, here in my own country, feels like the extremes are ramping up. Not quite sure how I feel about it. Certainly, if I'm honest, it's not looking good. Authoritarian creep is a real thing. I'm watching it happen in real time. Lucy put it quite brilliantly in the episode, talking about the situation she got involved in and the fact that the government's response to people being obviously angry about the killing of three children by an outsider was to alienate those people rather than to work with them to find a solution that hopefully brings people together. To be honest, it's a bit of a shit show here at the moment. Divide and conquer appears very much to be on the menu du jour. Unfortunately, I personally don't think politics will save us. Maybe if I see someone campaigning off the back of policies that will limit the size of government, especially the amount of government spending. But currently that does not appear to be happening. Anyway, don't forget, if you're a Free Cities person or a Bitcoin person listening to this episode, www.freecitiesconference.com. If you want to attend the Free Cities Conference this year and actually get to see what Tomek is working on in Prospera, tickets at freecitiesconference.com. Also check out freecities.fm. That's the new website for the podcast and includes a new search feature, which we put in last week. Very helpful if you want to look back across our extensive catalogue of episodes. Nearly 200 to date. Can't quite believe that. Right. Don't forget, self-custody your money. If you do, you'll probably be relaxed, which will allow you to sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Tomek K. As I was saying, we first met in, I think, in Poland, because you organised and still organise, which I find quite incredible since you're working out here as well, the Bitcoin Film Festival, which happened there.
Yeah.
Remind me, was that the film festival where we went to a party in a penthouse of that really rich crypto trader guy? Was that there?
Yeah, it was. It was the after party or before party for the first film festival, yes.
That's the main thing I remember from that. Going into it was incredible.
Not like, movies.
Who was that guy?
You showed your movie and you were more interested in a party.
Well, no, I did watch all the movies, yeah.
No, it's impossible to watch all of them. Who was he? Who is he? Yes, some type of Polish Wall Street trader who got maybe lucky, maybe smart at some point. He's not like a Bitcoin evangelist or anyone we should actually care about here.
No, but it was quite funny. It was like getting in a lift, going up to the penthouse of all penthouses and walking in, and they were just like, it looked like there were Russian babes everywhere, you know, in fur coats and stuff. It was so cheesy.
Yeah,
it was
anytime but something happens, you want to show off, right?
Yeah, that's his style. I get it. But so, yeah, the Bitcoin Film Festival. So I didn't even realize it, and that's my fault, not yours, that it's still running now.
Yes,
what, 4 years.
Have a fourth edition coming this June in Warsaw.
And what's the state of the Bitcoin film world then? Because it's not a great, it's not a massive world. And I get the feeling as well that 4 years ago, more people were making films about Bitcoin because it was more of a kind of thing. And now it's quite common and it's quite, you know, it's just part of life, right?
However, you can see probably a bit more films with Bitcoin in the plot that are just not made by Bitcoiners, made by our circle of activists, which is still the central community around festival. But there is like this movie with Pete Davidson about to happen. There is HBO was doing a film recently. Now Amazon has some film about crypto bubble. So these topics are appearing more often as we track it, at least for the last 4 years. And the state of Bitcoin cinema is still nascent, right?
Who's Peter Davidson?
It's just like one Hollywood actor, and there is this movie which is not, we wouldn't show it at a festival. It's not Bitcoin film because we don't show just films about Bitcoin, but it has to follow certain ethics, certain type of code of culture that Bitcoin subculture characterizes. And that movie will not be one of them, but it's an example that there is also Bitcoin films out there in Hollywood that are not captured by our...
What's that? Describe those films then. I've never heard of them. I might go and watch them. What are they? Just a plot line, or is it about Bitcoin?
Like, I would say that like 5 years ago, most of the films, at least those ones that we heard about, were around what is Bitcoin, or maybe some documentary from El Salvador. Now there is a bubble or a growth of films who is Satoshi Nakamoto, and not without a reason. This is the biggest story and the easiest one to put into some human narration.
I mean, I do remember one of the ones I watched was a French series about Satoshi.
The Mystery of Satoshi.
Yeah, which was great. It was done as a cartoon. That was an incredible... I can't believe that got commissioned. I mean, I come from the world of film, and to think that someone would commission a kind of comic book story about Satoshi and then put it on national TV, it was a big TV thing, right? You know,
I don't think the people from the fiat world as much see an enemy as, I don't know, Bitcoin as some type of enemy that they shouldn't be promoting.
No, I'm just not sure who was interested. Back then as well.
Yeah, right. This movie was even shown at Polish national TV at some point.
Yeah. So the new Hollywood films, they're Bitcoin is a side plot in them. Like this HBO, you said, and Amazon and stuff.
Well, the HBO was, again, the one that was looking for Satoshi Nakamoto.
Oh,
it came in December.
I remember.
Now, next week, there is a film coming out with the title Finding Satoshi, and the one with Pete Davidson title is Killing Satoshi. Last year, 2 years ago, the best story at Film Festival was Searching for Satoshi. So there is like probably a whole subgenre of Bitcoin cinema films about Satoshi discovery.
I wonder what it's going to be next.
Soon all the namespace looking for, searching for, finding, how, buscando Satoshi.
Becoming Satoshi. That's going to happen, isn't it? Becoming. Oh, no. Or it'll be.
Satoshi returns.
They'll work out who it is and then try and do a fly on the wall documentary. They're not going to find out who Satoshi is, as far as I'm concerned.
All of them claim they do.
Have you got an opinion on that, just out of interest?
Yeah, I guess also most of these big titles recently lean towards Hal Finney, and I wish it was him, actually. I wish, and most of the clues that I consider viable point towards there.
I was going to say, it would be an easy digest that if it was Hal Finney, because not only is he's a hero to most people see him as a Satoshi-like character, but also he's dead, mm-hmm. which would make, it means you can put a lid on it, because the whole thing is so stupid and so annoying. And the kind of people that will pursue Satoshi, I think, don't understand why it's not important. Because when you discover who Satoshi is, what happens? Apart from probably a lot of hassle for everyone, because then some so many things could come from knowing exactly who he is, but no one's going to, I don't know.
It will become politicized. It will become a story for gossip magazines, right?
Well, and it will also become an attack vector, basically. I think that's the main one. You know, the great thing about Bitcoin is there's no one powerful in the well, not strictly true. I suppose you could say there are.
And the story seems pristine because of how Bitcoin was created, that there is, we don't know who is Satoshi, and it's one of the main values of Bitcoin, I guess.
Yeah, especially the mythology. The mythology in Bitcoin is really important, I think. It has been for me anyway. That's why I don't want to know Satoshi's. I don't care. If suddenly Twitter blew up today and it said, you know, I don't know, Adam Back is Satoshi, I wouldn't give a shit.
But it's also funny how this myth is not closed chapter yet, right? Since we don't know, he might be alive. Since we don't know, he might leave his keys to his grandchildren. There is actually one Argentinian movie in production, animated one, about grandchildren of Satoshi, who discover his last will. So it's called Satoshi Last Will, the title of the project. And they need to collect 7 keys around the world to unlock Satoshi's Bitcoin.
That's quite a good story.
Classic pop culture trope in the same universe that we just opened.
It's a good idea, actually.
Right?
It's a good way of creating a storyline, actually.
It's also not closed myth because Hal Finney cryogenically frozen himself.
Is that right?
Right. I don't have proof for that, but that's kind of global consensus.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that at all. How have I missed that one? Is that a myth or is that real?
That's what I'm saying. It's a global consensus myth. I haven't seen his proof of work, proof of cryogenics. But this is what the internet is.
But where did it come from? Because his wife's alive. Someone could ask her, right?
Well, then you need to have this Joey or Jimmy who at the podcast does fact checking for us.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely looking into that one. I didn't know he was.
But then, right?
I mean, that's a phenomenal. That's a better story. Like 2090 and how Finney gets woken up and digs up a box in the ground and finds his private keys.
And I know that there are some films also working on story about that.
The problem is what he might be gutted about, because I saw this on Twitter this morning, that they're now, because of quantum and the new sort of like hype cycle about quantum, they're talking about trying to freeze a bunch of coins that aren't resistant to quantum, which I think is a terrible idea, purely from an ideological perspective. But also, sure, selling a bunch of coins into the market, if this was true, say, selling a bunch of coins into the market would cause the price to fall. But so what? The price has fallen like thousands of times, quite dramatically in the past, and it always reclaimed. I'd rather stick to the you can't touch the chain rather than just put up with some price dips.
You know? Luckily, it looks like we have still multiple years ahead for discussions what to do with those old Bitcoins. For the context, for the audience, there is this, in the Bitcoin world, there is this discussed danger of quantum computing that could break Bitcoin. It could actually break into, to simplify, some old addresses, old Bitcoin addresses. One of them being, or a few of them belonging to Satoshi and having lots of Bitcoin on them. So if the quantum computer comes, what happens to this? The one who first breaks the algorithm that protects those coins will get the Satoshi coins. So there is the danger, right, of price dropping or not. So there will be a race for these coins. But looks like technically we are still very far away from such computing methods to realistically happen.
I wouldn't be surprised as well if the Satoshi coins, which is about at least 1 million, right, there's not game theory behind them, because Satoshi thought of a lot of things. And I wonder whether it was important to leave a honeypot of 1 million Satoshi for some reason or other that we don't necessarily know about now. I used to think it was so that it was a kind of warning. It's like the canary in the coal mine. If they start moving, you know, like, for example, if you're Satoshi and a bunch of people that are friends but secret, and the Satoshi coins move, you know something's up straight away. And you can you know, it's like a warning signal.
And then what you do, right? Do you fork to another? Do you start using another blockchain where these coins would be blacklisted, where they wouldn't touch the market? Probably some people in the market would move to this chain, and that's what we call fork.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that it seemed a bit kind of most things in time when you study Bitcoin. Most things in time become significant. And those coins will become significant almost certainly, because they are now. But they're obviously gonna cause, you know, something to happen. Even if it's like rejecting the idea that you should freeze them, that's a good thing, because that's stress testing the network again and again and again. Otherwise, you know, like, I don't know, you didn't need to put them all on the same address. Didn't need to, you know, that's a lot of coins. And he knew, or she, or it, or whatever, knew it was like 20, you know, there's only 21 million, and 1 million of them are all on one address. There's something in it.
What the answer to who Satoshi is the most compelling to you?
Who it is?
Yeah, or what it is?
I don't know. I lean towards a group of people, but probably Hal Finney was involved. The problem with that theory is that means that Adam Back would have knows more than he's giving away. And I don't think you could hold out for this long. I don't think even the strongest person, and I wouldn't even say, I don't think Adam Back's necessarily...
Not the one.
Right? No. But I mean, if he was, I don't think he could lie for this long or hide it. I don't think he's got the right personality type for it. I think it needs an absolute nutter to not reveal that they're Satoshi. You know,
there is this double agent problem. Maybe he's so good at pretending that he pretends his character to be not the one that would fit us.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if he is, great. But you, I know people, like, I've gone through it in my mind a couple of times, and I think, God, to resist the fame, the fact that you're, like, especially because Adam was involved in the protocol. And I think probably he would be susceptible to people respecting him for being Satoshi, which is, I think in his case, it's not the money necessarily. It's more the kind of respect that you would get from a lot of people. And I don't know. I don't know, but my favorite idea is that it's probably the network probably originates from a completely different kind of place, some like alien like that.
I want to believe, right? I also don't know, but this one is compelling. I want, like, I don't know, like aliens from somewhere behind Saturn transmitting these bits of white paper to Earth, starting the idea. Or maybe not aliens from space, but maybe some being from time. And in the future, somebody figured that, hey, we can teleport into the past, but only some bits of information. And they decide to transmit the white paper in Satoshi Post. Because what we have from that time, right, from him, is basically digital trace.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That would be easy to influence from another dimension, I would imagine. This is all bullshit speculation. But I think of all the places that you could create a personality, would be in the digital world.
Like, they are like, we want to send them gold, but it's not transmittable through the portal. We need to send them digital gold. Let's send them bit.
But the one thing that where that slightly falls down, I think, is that there were bugs in the original code. But you could argue, right, they put those bugs there on purpose.
Double agent.
Well, okay. What, to put people off the scent?
Yeah, like to make them believe it was human.
Okay, but what if we hadn't noticed the bugs or something? Mind you, I'm sure they probably predicted that. Look, now we know how good AI is, right? You know, like, it's been a few years. You've been using AI a long time, I know. Now we know how good it is. It's very easy to predict what it's going to be like in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Would you really make a bug in a bit of software this important, you know?
You know, like workshops of public speaking, they sometimes recommend you to make mistake on purpose, right? So the audience feels more connected to you. Oh, he's one of us. He's also a human.
Is that right? Right, I'm an absolute pro then. I make mistakes all the time.
you already jumped into unconscious experience.
Yeah. That's it. I suppose you're right. So if you act normal, if you act more human-like, and that's almost certainly going to be something that AI is grappling with in the future.
AI is pretending that it's not taking power from us. I don't know. It's just sound outrageous, but this is the stories that are just maybe even more interesting to discuss than who was it in the past. No, I want to know it. Who was it in the future? There are storytellers in the Bitcoin space that are, you know, I also come from science fiction world and love Asimov books, etc. And there are some Bitcoin storytellers and then also filmmakers after them who would also, like the one from Argentina I mentioned, love to explore this idea into more abstract way into the world of fiction.
What are the films that you've got showing this season then, or this year? Like any that have you watched them all yourself?
Not all yet. I still need to check some submissions. We have a very interesting submission from Georgia, which is a psychological drama and tension between two partners who are about to break up, and Bitcoin is one of the core elements of tension between them.
In Georgia? Gosh.
From Georgia, yes.
That's not a famous filmmaking country.
Right? And there is Finding Satoshi, a bigger one from the US that actually comes out online in a week.
Is that the HBO one?
No. HBO is Money Electric, and it was also one of the many documentaries, Talking Heads. This is the biggest genre of Bitcoin cinema so far. But as we can see, every year there is, like, last year we had this comedy called Hotel Bitcoin, which is like Spanish comedy, which is like Ocean's 11 type of classical crime comedy, where somebody stole Bitcoin instead of computer, instead of money from somebody. And Bitcoin is the center of the plot. It's not a movie about Bitcoin, but it actually quite realistically portray what it is and what are the keys and where is the Bitcoin actually sitting, right? So I'm glad to see this industry as an audience. I'm glad to see it grow and develop artistically, that from documents on what is Bitcoin, and first Bitcoin videos were tutorials, right? How to click somewhere to send. And now we have animated videos, stories, who might Satoshi Nakamoto be in the future, right? This is wonderful to observe how this flourishes. Eventually it flourishes into such cinema that everybody enjoys watching.
Mm. It's true. I think one of the unmade films that will definitely get made is Michael Saylor's life, but only if it comes crashing down really badly. Because you need an ending, don't you?
Mm.
Like,
Do you think this is the ending for him?
I have got no idea. I've got no idea. I don't know why. If he comes crashing down, I think we all come crashing down, right? How does that implode without causing? I mean, like, if you think of all the great financial stories, my favorite obviously is the Big Short or whatever. You've seen that, right? Mm-hmm. It has to have a climax, and it doesn't have to be good. And with Saylor, everything's good always. It's always just more. He's got more. He's buying more Bitcoin. He's getting richer. He's got new products. He's, you know, we've never had a result that you could make a film out of, you know. But I suppose he could over leverage himself. But every time people say he's over leveraged, I look into it, and it turns out probably there's a counter argument to it. Put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What do you think? He could come crashing down?
Hopefully not. But also, I'm not a fan of seeing another Bitcoin mogul being an oracle to where the Bitcoin should be heading. So it's not like I wish him the best. I wish Bitcoin the best. But also, I don't wish him crashing for the reasons that you mentioned.
Well, also, I do find it a bit... It's, you know, when he first started, I mean, I have to be honest with you. If the thesis plays out, as we imagine, into the long distance future, my children will be fine because of Michael Saylor, really. Because Michael Saylor, when he really started aping in to Bitcoin, I remember that made me think, Jesus, this guy has got much more money than, and much more at risk than me, and he's aping in. And I changed my strategy at that point, I have to say. I've been, you know, so
it's hard to say what would happen if not for him, right? Maybe Bitcoin would stay lower and under the radar for a longer period, and it would be cheaper, so he could accumulate more. and your children would be even better without Sailor.
Maybe, but they might be aged 90.
I sometimes think that lower price for Bitcoin is better for Bitcoin, for long-term survival of it and democratization of Bitcoin as money. I'm not so much fan, like very often Bitcoin communities are cheering when Bitcoin goes up suddenly. It doesn't mean that suddenly all the world realized that this should be our money. It's usually some other explanations for some sudden market moves, not necessarily positive ones. But the more expensive it is suddenly, the earlier it is expensive, I guess the more institutionalized it will be. The more Michael Saylors of the world will be buying it rather than us, rather than typical pleb. And I think the more years we have with Bitcoin hovering around 100k or even lower, the more people could acquire it. If it would be, if this prediction of Bitcoin for 1 million would be realized this year, I don't think people on Honduras would be able to get it in the scenario, opposed to the scenario where it would just stay low.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the point, if Bitcoin's a million, unless we've hit hyperinflation, my thesis would be that people are using it much more generally in daily life. So I think probably the narrative becomes different. The narrative, sure, in countries where they're experiencing really bad inflation, people are going to be saving in it. And I think in everywhere, people will be saving in it, but more so in places where the actual currencies. But even when your currency isn't devaluing as much, you'll still be using it to save, I think. It just won't be the big gains. That's been the biggest narrative, hasn't it, for so long, is you can 10x your money, you can 100x your money, you can blah, blah, blah.
And this is what speaks to most of people.
Yeah, but not. But what about when, I mean, look at the world. We're sitting here at the moment, dude, and we're on the brink of World War III. We're on the brink of hyperinflation. We're on the brink of financial collapse. But these are all potentials, obviously.
We've been talking about this brink since 10 years.
Right, okay. Years. But also, it does seem a lot. It seems to me like, for example, this whole thing with Iran, okay? I'm looking at that thinking it seems a bit unnecessary, especially because I thought Trump was anti-war, for example. So it makes me think, right, there's an ulterior motive there. And what I'm seeing now, the results of it, same as during COVID. Do you remember? This shock, this financial shock. I'm a big proponent of the big reset and all this kind of stuff, you know, when, you know, and people requiring a massive reset. You could easily predict that this whole Iran thing is about a global reset. And it's to do with oil now. Because the oil shock will cause a massive problem. The printing will start to try and fix it. The inflation will kick in. You look back, you know, the all the big theories about the fourth turning theories normally say you need a war. It's one of the best ways to reset is a war, because suddenly during a war, all the rules go out the window and you can kind of get away with resetting the financial world. I think my initial thought was, well, you can never war that big anymore. And now I'm looking at this thinking, you don't need a big war. You need a war that's very targeted on assets that affect the financial world. And this is one of them. Already, we've got, I mean, I saw it today. My wife sent me a text and said, what's up with everything? You know, like there's everyone in the UK is queuing for petrol again. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. You know, as the price of all this stuff goes up, everything goes up in price. Everything, because everything uses oil, basically. And all of a sudden, we can stop you doing things again. Remember COVID? You can't do this, you can't do that, you can't travel here, you can't do this. I thought, how are they going to do it next? I sometimes wonder whether this isn't one of those big plans, you know?
Hard to prove, of course.
Sure.
And then, like, how would it unfold? Like, what are the, I can imagine secret groups controlling the world, but for me, it more looks like a side effect of the chaos and multiple of various groups of interest pulling the world in their own direction. After all, I don't think that, especially since how it unfolds, the war in Iraq, that I don't think that there is 3D chess behind it.
No. Not from Trump, maybe. Trump's doing what... But here's why I think it's weird. Because Trump really... I know he's a bullshitter and he lies all the time. They all do. But he really did campaign on the fact that no more wars. I remember that. That was one of the things I quite liked about him. I was like, dude, this guy is awesome, you know. And all of a sudden, he's going to war and he's bullshitting even more than ever. And that makes me think, right, this is when he gets sent into the back room and someone says...
Right, and it happens with all politicians.
It does, it does. But I don't think it's a secret cabal necessarily. I had it explained to me once on this podcast really well. It's global capital at work. It's this kind of blob of money and power, which requires certain things to happen. You know what I mean?
How would such a reset built around small war causing the oil crisis would help big capital?
Because they know it was going to happen. So they're either involved. They're basically... they need to reset. And how did World War II affect people? Well, if you look on the other side of World War II, there were some winners and losers, weren't there? America was a massive winner. Had all the gold, for starters, and then it just didn't give it back. And it became the most powerful nation in the world. So you could argue global capital is like, right, we need to move out of Europe because it's running its course here and we need to create a new market and blow that up. And so they know that the mechanism knows that. I don't know, mate. I'm making all this up, obviously. It's just I got no way of proving any of this stuff. I just think that I tend to look at it from the perspective of between me and my friends, let's say. We do deals. We talk to each other. We're like a cabal of people. Like if you need something and I can help you, I will.
We don't talk about it in public, right?
Exactly right. So that obviously scales to like the highest echelons of society as well. It's just a very normal and natural thing to do. If you're in a group of people who you trust or you help everyone, that's what happens. And I think that happens at the largest level of society where some people have astronomical amounts of money and power and they don't want to let go of it. They're just watching their risk. They're like, it's more risky if we leave our capital here. So we need to do something else. And because they have the power to steer the world, why wouldn't you? If you were that person, you and me,
we don't care about it, right?
Well, exactly. We'll never go that high. We don't want that much power, I think. I mean, who knows? If someone just tapped you on the shoulder tonight and said, right, you're the king of the world. Actually, no, I wouldn't even take it. Exactly. Why would I? I don't know what. I prefer the millions of people interacting, creating the market that way, creating the world. It's like, I don't.
So like Olympics now.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a secret cabal necessarily, but I'm a version of. I think it's a naturally occurring thing. And it's global capital. So, it's these big pools of global capital moving around. And I think a lot of it at the moment is on account of the fact that it's fiat capital as well, which is, I don't think it happens in the same way under a hard money standard. So I think they'll probably fight that quite hard.
Unless they already captured it or created.
They could have done. The CIA could have created Bitcoin, mate, as far as I know. I know that it's open source.
I think too much competence. They don't seem so competent with like some simple things.
I don't know.
Do you think Trump's assassination attempts were real?
As in... real,
like, was it staged?
I don't know. Look, if it was staged,
he never talks about it, right?
No, but if it was staged, right, it can't have been a bullet that actually flew past his ear and grazed it, because you can't risk that. In so it must have been something else. I don't know, mate. I tend to think no. I think all this stuff does happen. I think that whole debacle with Trump getting assassinated, there's so many holes in everything about that. But probably the least number of holes is in the fact that someone actually did want to kill him. That did seem, for me, it seemed like someone actually did want to kill him. Who they framed and what happened and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's full of holes. But the fact that it was, if it wasn't some kind of CGI, like hologram nonsense, which is hard to believe, but could, yeah, it could happen, then it was just an incredible piece of luck that he didn't die. And, you know, within a few, many months of that happening, we saw someone else get assassinated in a very similar way. Charlie Kirk's assassination was really similar, I thought. So, you know, and he wasn't missed. They didn't miss him. But then again, yeah, was that a hoax? I got no idea. That one seems a bit weird. Because it ties in with the fact that he was probably going to go on to become president, in a la Donald Trump, in the same kind of way that Trump was president. So tried to kill Trump.
I think Trump got president, and then this cabal took him on the side, and okay, now you're a puppet.
No, they're thinking, yeah, well, exactly.
And this person needs to agree to be a puppet.
I don't think
it's maybe easier to believe than that this is honest from him.
I don't think you can get out of it. I think it works like this. I think no matter who you are, when you because people have got so much shit on you, or they can literally just threaten you with death, which is no one wants to die. I think even no matter who you are, you get to a point where you realize, to be honest, it's easier just to do this bit. Because most of my life, I have agency. In most of my life, I can go golfing at Mar-a-Lago. I can have sex with my wife. I can eat lovely food. It's just I have to go and invade Iran, and I'm going to get a lot of shit for it. But, you know, in my private life, and I'm not sure how much Trump cares about the fact that a lot of people now think he's a bit of a liar. I mean, he's always been a liar, for God's sake. That was part of his, that's what I quite liked about him. His lies were so obvious that he wasn't sneaky about his lies. He'd just say silly things like, this is the best golf club you've ever been to, because it's his golf club. And it's like, yeah, whatever, dude, it's just a golf club and there's better ones. We know that, but you're just full of shit, you know. At least I could read him. You know what I mean? No.
Hopefully it would be interesting to see when this all unfolds, when all the masks fall down. Who was he? What was the thing with the Epstein, right?
But will they? Will they fall down? Like, what causes the masks to fall down?
AI breaking in their computers.
You reckon?
I don't know. I wish, I hope. Maybe aliens need to help us.
But then again, right? I haven't had a good look through the Epstein files, right? But according to most people, they're pretty damning, and there's a lot of nasty stuff in there. Nothing's happened. It's just out there. It's almost like, So what happens these days? What happens if the mask gets pulled off? The mask just got pulled off, right? You know, it's even worse because loads of people that we know were involved aren't even in there. So they've obviously been taken out. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the whole thing, obviously. So
and nothing has been done about it. Like,
no.
Then why do we care?
Right. True. We don't necessarily care. We're talking about it now, but do I actually care? No. What I care about is my immediate surroundings. And that's why I'll never be the king of the world, because I don't care.
Especially here on Roatan, right? These things don't touch you as much.
No, they don't. It's a good call, actually. They might do. I mean, maybe we should talk about that. And yeah, we weren't supposed to spend the first half hour talking about Bitcoin conspiracy theories. But I came to talk to you about Bitcoin in a way that no one really talks about Bitcoin, I think, which is that, and we're on Roatan in Prospera, the most sort of the most cutting edge free city in the world currently. And I actually think I said this to you the other day, that I think you're such a lucky guy, because
for sure. Yes.
How old are you, by the way?
33.
Right. I had a second round of a big traveling in my 30s. I did my 20s and then I worked and then I did my 30s. And I'm in my prime. In my 30s, traveling the world, having my best life, right? It's the best.
You are still in your prime, I see that.
Well, I'm not. I'll be honest with you, I'm not. But I want to get back to it, actually. Being here has made me realize there's some things I can do to get much better and much younger.
Like anyway. What?
Well, all the therapies that they've got going on here.
Okay.
But just generally, also, I live I live in a cold, wet place, which is the UK. And it's funny, when I got off the plane on this island, I spent a lot of my formative years in tropical countries, especially Southeast Asia.
They suddenly came back.
The smell.
Yes, smell suddenly
the
brings
smell,
back
your memories. And I was like, Jesus, I remember me.
Wet and hot.
I remember that version of me. And I got it the other day. You know, I said to you, you told me to go up the hill to have a look at that place they're building up there. I walked up there in early evening. I got some more rushes because I was in the jungle and I could feel, and I was like, holy shit, man, I miss this, you know. No, but you're the luckiest guy I know, because you're a Bitcoiner, right? And you've got a job in the best job in Bitcoin, I think. You could work at Swan Bitcoin. You could, I don't know, work for Michael Saylor or whatever. But this is really interesting, what you're doing here. And so I think that's what we came here to talk about. So come, let's talk about it. What exactly are you doing here in the most cutting edge free city in the world?
So we don't need to introduce Prospera to your listeners?
Not really, yeah. No. But I will, because there's a load of Bitcoiners will listen to this. Like when you look at the listening stats on this podcast, we have our core listeners, and it's pre-cities people. But if
how do you recognize it? Do you see like tag of the people?
What no. You just see pumps. It's Nosta versus
okay, like Fountain.
Like if I get a lot. So for example, if I get more than 1,000 listens on Fountain, it's someone to do with Bitcoin. You know, it's someone, or it's you know, like Knuts von Holm, or it's Max Hillebrand, those names, the kind of the Bitcoiners, Bitcoiner names, mm-hmm, that people like. But then if it's a Free Cities one, even if it's someone famous in the Free Cities world, the Fountain stats are much smaller. Right? Yeah.
However, so, your conference is quite big.
The conferences, yeah. But once again, I think they're just not interested. Like, you know, this week, Patrick Freeman's going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most famous people in the Free Cities space, right? Yes. But there, not many people are going to listen from Fountain. I don't think it's going to be all other people.
Guys, you got to check the next episode with Patrick Friedman.
He's it will have gone out by now, mate. It will have gone out ages ago. But Patrick is an OG. He's actually a Bitcoin OG as well, funnily enough. But he just he's you know, he's more into the free city stuff.
Now you have awesome guests. I'm humbled to be among them. That's why I let you to talk more, because I love to listen to you.
No, but dude, what I've realized is the Free Cities world is going to be massive. I knew it was, but the last 6 months have taught me, oh shit.
Last 6 months, why?
Because we've had so much change in it. We've had so much change. Like, I started this podcast in Prospera about 4 years ago.
Okay.
My first interviews were with Jorge, mm-hmm, and a few other people.
Current mayor, yes.
Yeah. He's still the mayor now.
Still a mayor.
Yeah. And it ticked over for a few years. You know, we were talking about it. There's a socialist government here who wants to shut everyone down. What are the other projects that are happening? Well, there's not much. There's seasteadings. Nothing's happening there. There's, you know, all these sovereign ways of living. And then in the last 6 months, the government changed here. Suddenly, lights are back on. Everyone's going nuts here.
You can feel it here.
You can definitely feel it here. Seasteading, 3 new prototypes just came out. Tipolis, which is the private, yes, guys, they've got a load of projects. We can't talk about them really yet, but they're running, you know.
This is the secret cabal?
Well, no, not because they're secret like that, but because actually revealing them too early is now... It's a bad strategy. We've worked that one out. I've noticed that with a few people. I'm going to the US on Tuesday to do another round of interviews. There's a couple of people I really want to speak to there. And they've said, look, respectfully, no, we just want to stay under the radar, mm-hmm, for a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I get it. I really do understand it. Some people, they want to come straight out and say, hey, look what we're doing. But actually, and you could argue Prospera fell foul to this. Prospera, basically, if they were coming out now, it would be a lot. It would be all positive media. Mm-hmm. They spent years having negative media. Yes. But anyway.
We don't need to introduce Prospera to the audience, but it's a free economic zone. We want to see it as future city in a Caribbean island, Roatan, that belongs to Honduras. And yes, in the recent few months, the government changed to much more friendlier. So everybody is bullish about Prosper. And if we imagine a future city, Hong Kong of the Caribbean, we can imagine districts of such city. So I came here a year ago with a not specific idea yet, but I came to meet Prospera. And Prospera has been on my radar for like years. I've been libertarian activist for years, so it was naturally, I heard about it. Same like about Bitcoin. I heard about it since like, I don't know, 2013, 14. It didn't make me interested that much yet then. I got interested later. And same with Prospera. Opportunity arose that I could come and visit last year for some event. Some friends invited me and I came. And it was a connection of two worlds that I like have been inspiring me for years. The world of Bitcoin and the world of private societies aligned on certain values, inspired by Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged and the Galt's Gulch. They had this hidden society, right? This Prospera is not so hidden. We build in the open. But for me, those are the two projects in the libertarian world, in the world advancing freedom, that are bringing this freedom the most efficiently. For sure, Bitcoin is, and I believe such projects as network states, free cities, the redefinition of how the governments could look like in states is something that can really change the world in the long term. So I'm super happy that these two projects merge here on Roatán, and I'm happy to co-create it with Bitcoin District. So Bitcoin District is a big Bitcoin ecosystem within Prospera. You probably heard about this layer twos on Prospera. If you take Prospera as a protocol for infrastructure for governance, startup governance as a service, right? Then you can imagine products built on this infrastructure, on this protocol. But Prospera as a minimal government, they don't want to be involved. They do tax collection, conflict resolution, agreement with the government, but business, making money, marketing, sales is kind of outsourced to other entrepreneurs like Niklas we had here. He has this layer 2 Infinita that is also a startup that looks how to be a bridge between Prospera and the world of biotech. They're still figuring the way how to monetize it, but for sure you can do something being on that interface. So I'm doing similar thing and being that interface for Prospera and the world of Bitcoin.
And it's also a physical place. What?
Should we turn on the AC? I can see you are also sweating.
No. Do you mind? Because I just don't want to have to do a load of post-production.
No. I'm used to heat.
You're sweating as well.
I'm not used to such too many suns, but...
But these aren't giving off heat, the LEDs.
No, yes. But
we could turn it on, but it just means I've got to run an AI on it.
We could pretend we are on a beach. We are near to the beach.
Yeah, I think it's authentic.
It's good.
No, what I was going to say was, what I like about Prospera and the Bitcoin connection, because I've been on this journey myself, was I was a Bitcoiner for years, and... Everything about Bitcoin, the ethos behind it, was who I was. And it was like, wow, this is really worth working towards. And then a few years ago, when Bitcoin's now just happening, is happening. You know what I mean? And I naturally morphed into the world of living together, which is a new frontier and a much more difficult one to solve. I thought Bitcoin in the digital world is amazing, and someone did it and it solved the problem. It's fucking amazing and it solved the problem. The world of people living together is much more of a gray area, but you still want to solve the same things. You want freedom, you want property rights, you want all these things that Bitcoin gives you in the digital world. You know, it creates them very seamlessly and very like perfectly, but the real world ain't perfect. And there's always problems. And you can create property rights here. But the government could come in with guns and say, no, that's my property now. Fortunately, in the last 6 months, we saw, here, that doesn't actually work because the socialists said, we're shutting you down. And the legal protections worked. So I love that. It's much more of a gray area to me. And actually, so I shifted now. I'm a Bitcoiner through and through at heart. But what I'm really, really, really interested in is the market of living together now, which is where we are. And that's what I like about your thing, because it's a physical place. It's not some digital realm of Bitcoin. It's buildings, it's people, it's communities.
Prospera exists. Many people don't believe it. And for me also, it was quite abstract. Over the ocean, somewhere there, I see photos. I'm not sure if those are renders or photos. This is too beautiful. But in fact, there is around 200 people living here, and we have a nice dynamic community of mostly builders and people who are optimistic about the future, which makes it a very nice, hot pot of interesting people coming through. Just the main utility of Prosper, I think, today, more than being a regulatory haven, is the fact that you can come through and meet so many different, entrepreneurs, startups, people interested in freedom, libertarians like you coming here, visit for a month. And yes, this is also redefining, since there is territory, there is some kind of governance around it. We need to solve the community and build friendships, learn how to live here. There is people who find their place on the island, find their tropical citadel. They come here, and this is what also Bitcoin District is trying to solve, is how to live together, how to build a neighborhood. So we are also building. District so far is, I know that it's maybe not super specific to explain, but imagine if you have this type of startup for a few months that trying to build a future district of a city and trying to figure out how to build this bridge between Prosper and Bitcoin and be sustainable, so there is eventually some positive cash flow, right? We've been pivoting and changing our ideas, what works, what we should be doing. Now it has a bit better shape, but after these 8 months, we already have quite working an active community of future neighbors, around 300 people online. Here on the island, around 50 Bitcoiners. So we meet weekly for co-working Tuesdays, for Satoshi Saturdays. We have quite a nice track record of events that we organize. So there is a story layer, there is community layer, and we are building a physical neighborhood too, as well, called the Orangeville, over there in Prospera, in a jungle valley. We try to have our own Bitcoin neighborhood with Bitcoin, not in name, but in values, in community that buys around or moves there. It's a project in Spe. We secured funding for the phase one, so it will be happening. Hopefully within 1-2 years, there will be over a dozen of jungle apartments that belong to the Bitcoin district.
Wow. What are they going to look like, just out of interest?
Have you those are like wooden modular blocks climbing up the hill, and they can scale up into like a whole village.
Are they the ones that you often see in pictures of Prospera that Zaha Hadid designed?
No, this is different.
Yeah. No. Are they going to be built in the circular factory? Are they ones with bendy wood and stuff?
No. Ours is not so bendy. It's more straight shapes. It's not being produced yet, but most probably Circular Factory, which is our local wood manufacturer. And most of the stuff that you can see around in Prospera is built by Circular Factory, probably the only industrial manufacturer physically here in Prospera, and already a big one. No, those will be wooden over there in the jungle, modular, climbing up the hill. We kind of, with a German architect who is also a Bitcoiner, we tried to design a MVP, first pilot building that could scale up into the whole neighborhood. So we have a master plan and vision for the whole Bitcoin neighborhood, and Orangeville is the phase one of it.
Wow. That's why I say you've got one of the best jobs in the world. If you're a young Bitcoiner, Jesus. It's like building a physical node.
It's so much fun. I'm so excited to be here. I live on the island. It's next to the beach. Okay, maybe this beach is not the best, the Prospera one, but on Roatan you have quite a few. There is enough of, and I do what I'm good at doing, connecting the dots. And here we have lots of dots on Roatan. Like there is maybe not yet a circular economy, but enough of merchants on the island, onboarded by AmiTH and Bitcoin Center, that Bitcoin could be circulating there. There is enough of community that there is enough for us to have monthly meetups. There is enough of businessmen or OGs with the capital that are happy to support some initiatives. Like this month, we are working on the Bitcoin Arena. We are renovating the biggest sports venue in Roatan. You can imagine a school sports arena, which is quite big, but it's in a very bad condition. They didn't even have bathrooms there or cloakrooms. Kids were changing like behind the wall. So we're renovating it. We are painting it. In 2 weeks, there is a basketball tournament, international one, that should already happen on the renovated Bitcoin Arena. So we got naming rights to the biggest sports venue and basically help a community to have some place for sports over 1,000 kids every week go through this place to play basketball, volleyball. We can imagine what in Honduras they could do if they wouldn't have this venue.
I'm going to have to put the aircon on. Yeah. I'm just looking at your face, mate, thinking.
I'm looking at your face. Yeah,
is mine bad as well, right?
Yeah, okay. Like, so you.
I'm sorry, guys, if there's a big humming sound in the background now, but this is the. We're on a Caribbean island. It's like, and I had it running for a long time before we came in here. But, oh, Jesus.
You can hear it.
You can
hear
it. This
is the price of temperature.
I think, well, let's see. My AI should be able to get rid of it. It's going to chill down.
Maybe there's some quiet mode, podcast mode on
it. Oh, no, it's not too bad. It's not too bad. I will work my hardest. No, so, yeah, so... I can't help thinking about the other physical nodes around the world, the other physical
Bitcoin hubs. Right?
Yeah, like obviously Bitcoin Beach is one of them. You've got the Bitcoin, what's it called? Bitcoin Park in Nashville.
There's PlebLab in Austin. There's Hackerspace. There is a bar in New York, the Pub Key.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a Bitcoin house in Bali. There is a few is projects there? In Thailand, yes. In Asia, there is recently like quite a few hubs they have in Japan, in Thailand. I think in Thailand, there is two or three. Chiang Mai, Bangkok. In Indonesia, there is Bitcoin Bali House. There are these places, right, where basically they organize around some co-working space, cafe, price things. In Satoshi, there is always a wall full of stickers. I saw one in Mexico, Casa de Satoshi. And it also made me think how, like, there are things how... Every Bitcoin hub does the same. Like, everybody has stickers.
Have you got one for here?
Well, you can see Bitcoin Center by MITH.
Yeah, have you got a sticker?
Do I have a sticker? Yeah, yeah. In our sticker is
over there. Because
you need to have your sticker. Yeah.
Yeah, I
need to put it on
these
hubs that you.
We haven't got a sticker, but I should get. I'm going to get a sticker made.
A sticker.
Yeah, I know.
It's the easiest merch.
I saw that in the Infinita co-working space. One of the doors has so many stickers.
Now I'm putting stickers on my motorbike. I'm always like a sticker freak.
Funny enough, though, I have been collecting Bitcoin stickers for about 10 years and more. I used to collect them for my kids to start with. You know, like whenever I come back from a big trip, especially if you go to a conference, one of the things I used to love when they were small is I'd have a bag and I'd just throw it on the floor and say, right, one by one, you take a sticker each. And there were always hundreds of these bloody things, you know, all these.
But you collect them like in a portfolio?
No. I've got a drawer full of them. Like some of them go back, you know, some really good, cool ones, especially from Baltic Honey Badger back in the day and things like that.
Oh, they had good graphics.
Yeah, they're really good. But anyway, back to here. So what have you learned from the different personalities of other Bitcoin centers around the world? I mean, what makes, for example, a Bitcoin district any different from, say, the Nomad district that they're building up there, which is basically the same kind of theory, except it's nomads. You create a place where they come and a co-working space. And, you know, what's the difference between a nomad space and a Bitcoin space?
I think you try to compare two different use cases, right? Nomads have their own like network of, I think now, 3 locations. And this is mainly like a network of hostels. While Bitcoin District, Orangeville is one of the projects, right? We want to have a place because real estate is the biggest industry here on Tarahatán, next to tourism. So it's also natural if we want to build here, whatever Bitcoin District might be, physical anchor is necessary and also might provide eventually some money for the activism that we do, like the things with Bitcoin Arena, like organizing those workshops, right? So this is this has business justification, but also ecosystem building justification. But Bitcoin District is much more, right? We organize those retreats. Now we have BitChill Season 3. There is like a way for 10, 20 Bitcoiners every quarter to come here and spend a good time on workshops, diving, meeting other people, partying, experiencing Prospera, Prospera leadership.
BitChill. I don't think you explained that well enough. BitChill. It's starting on tomorrow, isn't it?
We actually already started here with some activities.
Yeah.
So this is our Caribbean Bitcoin retreat. It's not an event business for us, but I'm happy to host those Bitcoiners coming over because eventually they might become Prospera residents, that might be our clients in the services that we still try to figure what would be. So we are strong on events. We had this BitChill, we had Bitcoin games, 150 people played for over 2 Bitcoin of prizes in various competitions. And I think we will follow on that formula. It was very nice Olympic of different games.
Dude, can I ask something about that? Because I was gutted I missed that. That happened just before I came here. How the hell did you have 2 Bitcoin prize money for like chess and stuff? Where? Who's got 2 Bitcoins to give away for a chess competition?
Like, where does no names flying, but it looks like there are Bitcoiners who are ready to sponsor activities and see Bitcoin grow, and we are grateful to have them around on Rata.
Is that where you get all your investment for the Orangeville as well? Is it Bitcoiners?
Well, not all, but yes, and I think this is also one of the profiles that we try to target our services. We don't see that much of them online, but we try to target those OGs whales that would like to have the Caribbean experience. They come through and are happy to donate to Bitcoin Arena to make Roatan one of the most Bitcoin dense islands in the world. We try to like push this motto as our agenda with our Bitcoin Roatan community. It's our community, a coalition of various organizers of various Bitcoin things, because I'm not the only one here. That is the most Bitcoin dense island on the world. And actually, I think we have reasons to support it.
Is that right? Most Bitcoin-dense island on the world?
Look, 100,000 people live here on Roatan. There is around 60 merchants that accept Bitcoin. Hotels, diving centers, restaurants. On Prospera, it's estimated that around 10-15% of economy runs on Bitcoin transactions, including rent, including property acquiring, taxes.
I paid my rent with Bitcoin. Eh?
Yes.
Because it wouldn't accept.
In Prospera, everybody accepts Bitcoin.
Yeah. Right?
So there is a Bitcoin Center, there is Bitcoin District. We are building real estate project. There is a Roatan Bitcoin Poker League. Now we will be building Bitcoin Arena. There is some Bitcoin graffiti out there on the island. So if there is other island, we are happy to have a friendly competition for this title.
When we first came here about 4 years ago, the Bitcoin Center was one of the places that was finished because you inherited it, or you weren't here then. But it was inherited. It was a former school, wasn't it, that got turned into the Bitcoin Center?
They wanted to make it a restaurant. But in general, Prospera, what happened, right? You know the story that Prospera acquired one of their resorts with already multiple nice buildings when it bankrupted during pandemic. And Bitcoin Center was one of them. It wasn't Bitcoin Center there. It was supposed to be visitor center / restaurant. And now AmiTH, which is the mining company, that is registered in, they mine in Ethiopia and Paraguay, but they are registered in Prospera, and they rent this place from Prospera to run a Bitcoin center, our hub for education, coffee. We do meetups there.
Do you think it will shift over here eventually then, if you build a Bitcoin district? Because you're building on this side. Prospera is, just for reference, it's a large area of land, but it's kind of split into two halves. Because they bought this resort, which was this 350-acre sort of...
Which is not far from here.
No, but it's exactly. But it is two different separate places, isn't it? At the moment, there's definitely this two situation vibe. You've got them and us.
Old town and new town.
Yeah, it is. It's like that. You're absolutely right.
So, but eventually, they hopefully this will all be merged into one huge Hong Kong.
I'm almost certain it will. I'm almost, now I've been here, and especially because I've spoken to Gabe and a few of the other guys who are running the place, their vision is much bigger than I thought. I thought, cool, it's going to be nice. No, they're talking about Hong Kong and Singapore style.
Especially if you personally have a chance to talk with Gabriel or Eric, you see how mission driven they are. I'm always impressed by that. And also how many big plans are in the making, which are not yet public. Mm-hmm. Prospera has more land on the mainland.
Yeah.
Which eventually might be turned into harbor.
It's going to be a port. Gabe told me the other day. They're going to turn it into a deep water port, and then they're going to start running stuff, because you can run stuff straight to here then, across the land.
There is already a cargo boat that is doing trips from Miami to Roatan. It's on its third trip now. So Prospera already is launching a deck for cargo ships, and soon customs autonomy might be ready.
Yeah, because they've got a big the island, basically the one of the biggest income sources are the big boats that come in, the cruise liners, right? So they've got the ability to accept large boats here. And oh my god, Gabe was talking about drone 60 kilometer drone deliveries constantly going backwards and forwards. You know, It's incredible, really. I missed that when I came the first time.
Right, this drone delivery also, let's not get our listeners fall into this imagination of what Prospera is today, because I also saw that with two restaurants, drone is bringing you coffee to go, right? You come to Prospera, there is nobody operating the drone. There is no such service, right? People are still experimenting. There is not that much yet business use case. As for most of the stuff here, right? Imagine it's just 200 people. It's hard to sustain the restaurant that is below us. So restaurant drone delivery, even it's even more difficult.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an experimental phase.
I know. I'm not trying to give the impression that there's drone deliveries here, but I had the impression that there will be drones flying across the sea probably continuously in the future. I get that now, because that's already, I've seen that in China on, you know, I've seen videos of people using very primitive versions of that, and already it's pretty good for nice. Large loads, not little tiny things, but large loads coming by drone. And you know it's going to get better. You know it. Give it 10 years, give it, imagine 25 right now, 40 years. What's it going to be like in 40 years? It's going to be, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Very bullish, yeah.
Right, back to Orangeville then. So your investors, do they invest to get a return as well? Or are they just OG Bitcoiners who've got 10,000 Bitcoin, so they're spending like 10 of them doesn't matter?
I think it's the case for most of the investors in Prospera and around Prospera. Those are not traditional funds that expect specified and researched return on an investment, but those are ideologically aligned people who, even if they don't see return within a certain time frame, they would be satisfied with some positive changes on a society, right? And that Prospera succeeds. And it's a similar case, I guess, with also majority of Bitcoin startups. And this is also a startup. And most of Bitcoin startups also, they don't have positive cash flows yet. They are the self-custodial Lightning wallets that were on the rise 2 years ago. Now they are either pivoting or looking for other ways to monetize. There is not that much money on like proceeding with Bitcoin, because it's designed and its ethos is about not having intermediaries and just having transactions peer-to-peer. So how can you be in between and make money? And this is a problem that most of the Bitcoin startups are trying to solve, but probably more than most, probably most are actually trying to solve the problem, not make the money. Making money would be the nice positive side effect, but it's not, there is not that much, I guess, pressure from investors, and it's not specific to Bitcoin District, but it's among Prospera investors and in general various Bitcoin VCs.
Do you think one day the Bitcoin District will just be called the Bitcoin District?
The District.
No, it'll be called the Bitcoin District still, but it won't be as relevant, right? I'm just thinking about, imagine that this place is more like Hong Kong. Everywhere uses Bitcoin if they want to. I'm not necessarily going to say there's hyper-Bitcoinization, but everywhere will use it if they want to.
Yeah, but you might have some jeweler street, because 50 yeah. years ago there was three
That's
jewelers,
what I mean,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But it won't be as relevant. I mean, this is the thing I wonder, because I've noticed it in me. I've stopped caring as much about the Bitcoin world as I used to. I used to love my Bitcoin brothers and sisters, and I still do. But now it's not as important, actually. They're still there. And there's, you know, when you see an old mate from a Bitcoin mate, there's that, right, you know, there's that acknowledgement. But really, it's not like we're necessarily all fighting together anymore.
It's a good sign.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I agree. But but that means that in the future, what's it going to be? We're just going to be old friends, aren't we? And then, you know, there's not going to be the Bitcoin element there, potentially. I don't know. I wonder. I do wonder.
That we will not be specifying that it's a Bitcoin thing, because...
Yeah, but what will make it any different? Like, that's why I asked you what's different between the Bitcoin District, Orangeville, and the Nomad District. So a company, Nomad, who have got sort of like places around the world where nomads come and work for a bit and do the, they're building a little village here in Prospera. Right. So, but I think there's kind of like the same kind of thing. Like, if I came to here and the Bitcoin Center is built, of course I'm going to live in the Bitcoin Center. But what's the difference? All right. Between that and Nomad, maybe it won't be bunk beds. I don't know.
Well, after all, we all eat and sleep, right? And we don't need to like talk about Bitcoin. And it can be, if we imagine this is a city, yes, this wouldn't matter. Now Nomad District, Nomad Village, I think they are called, they are focusing on, they still don't have them, right? But they want to be bringing various digital nomads for a rotten experience, renting a place and moving on. Bitcoin District, maybe district name is a bit misleading, but it's a building an ecosystem of Bitcoin in Prospera, right? We help Bitcoiners to come here, Bitcoin businesses, individuals, families to come here, visit Prospera, learn what it is, incorporate their business. Many of them do, and we need Bitcoiners on the spot. And we are here. We are running a hackathon, Vibe Camp, Bitcoin Vibe Camp in August, then poker tournament in August. We are heavy on games, on organizing local community. There will be Orangeville real estate project, but there is already so many more Bitcoin stuff around that I'm happy that the Bitcoin District is growing this direction.
So what? Go on.
What would be its specific product at the end? Maybe we will move on to boat parties on the Caribbean Sea, right?
Yeah, but at that point you'll be in your 40s. You won't be thinking about boat parties. Are you here for the long haul, do you think? You?
Personally? I think so, yeah. I the more I am here, the more I like the island. The more people you know, the more reputation and track record you have, the more you know how to behave on the island. It's you know, it's different infrastructure, different environment. You need to kind of be here to understand it better, and it's just normal, I guess. I guess I got accommodated, and now it's my center of my life interest and for future.
What? How does it work with you know, getting a long visa and stuff then? Like, if you really seriously wanted to, do you have to still leave every now and then at the moment?
Not currently. I already applied for my residency. There is few residency paths for Honduras. So Prospera residency is another story. But to enter, yes, the country, you get a visa for a certain amount of days. But it's not that difficult to be a resident. And in a few months, I will be. Now I can travel with this application. So also, if there are some specifically Bitcoiners, but not only, who are interested into getting their residency here or into registering a company with non-KYC features, they can come to us and we can help that happen in Prospera.
Well, that's one of the things probably worth mentioning, actually, that Prospera, the part of the reason that it exists is because it has regulatory autonomy from the government and a number of other things. That means you can start your company here or you can incorporate your company here and there's a very reasonable tax rate.
It was the first jurisdiction that actually made Bitcoin its official currency before Salvador did. And Salvador is not anymore. Mm. It's a legal tender, but it's not official currency. You cannot pay taxes anymore in Bitcoin there. Here in Prospera, you can not only pay your residency and pay your taxes in Bitcoin, but you can also denominate it in Bitcoin. So as a business, you can run your books on BTC, your profits and your costs, and based on that you pay taxes, which you cannot do anywhere in the world. And there is still just a handful, but there is more and more businesses that are operating on a Bitcoin standard because they have paid their salaries in Bitcoin, they have their income in Bitcoin, and they need jurisdiction where they can do it without conversion to dollars. And Prospera today is the only such jurisdiction, and we have already over 15 Bitcoin-only startups that are registered and operating from Prospera.
Does that mean if you run it on a Bitcoin standard, does that mean, say you make 2 Bitcoin profit in a year and your tax is, what is it here? Is it 4% or?
There is 1% corporate income.
Right, 1%, right?
For the income, it's a territorial tax in Honduras. So it's only income made in Honduras is taxed.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Say it was. Say you made a a Bitcoin's worth of profit and you were taxed 1%. So you're
Bitcoin taxable income, then you pay percent of the Bitcoin.
Yeah, but do you pay it in Bitcoin? So is the tax 0.001 Bitcoin? Or is it the dollar amount?
No, that's what I mean. This is in Bitcoin and you calculate percentage based on your profit made in Bitcoin.
So if the price, so that means that you're hedged against the price going down because you're basically paying your tax in Bitcoin. So, but then if the price goes up, potentially you're paying more tax as well.
Yes, that's what it is.
Right,
that's
okay. What it is. I know. I've never thought of it as a like that.
There is still like not big companies using that. And they usually use Prospera entity as a subsidiary to some other operations. But we are preparing that infrastructure, right? Prospera is already there as a protocol, but there is still lack of some services. You can come click on Prospera website, register your company, pay in dollars or Bitcoin, and have your tax number. But what's next? Like, people from outside, they don't know. Okay, but where do I have a lawyer, accountant? Is there any agency that helps me come through this? Or do I need to raw dog it? Most of the jurisdiction, you don't raw dog it, but you get your business registered through an agency. You don't do it directly at the Minister of Entrepreneurship. Here in Prospera, you know, after like 3-4 years being here, like physically, this type of services agencies only now start to emerge. And everything here, I can see it's such a chicken egg problem, right? Businesses don't come because there is no such agencies. Or it's more difficult without such. Such agencies don't appear because there is not enough businesses. There is only now we have grocery store within Prospera. Before, some potential vendors were saying there is not enough people to have a grocery. But then people come and say there is no grocery store. So you need all of them to slowly grow together. And having that in mind, it's harder to be surprised while this growth is in such tempo as it is.
It's worth saying, though, and I'm not shitting on Prosper here, but the grocery store experience is terrible. No, because basically it's been turned into a kind of automatic grocery store, and there's not enough stuff in there. I mean, it's all right if you need some toilet paper or you know, but also the process of paying for it was just so difficult to understand.
This grocery is here for like last 4 months. I haven't used it yet. I have a car, so it's easy for me to go to supermarket and grab stuff, but many visitors don't. Then people like you can borrow a car from me.
I know, and thank you for lending me or offering to lend me a car. I was working so bloody hard I didn't use it. But I that's the surprising thing. I came here to experience Prospera in this time, and I have, but I have worked a lot. I've been working 7 days a week. Not because I wasn't enjoying it. I've been so productive, and in a way, I think I've probably missed out on a few things. I'm going to definitely come to the Bitchio things this weekend.
No worries. All of us here in Prospera have this mode of working, and then chilling on the beach. So you can easily, right? You can see staying in Duna. You can easily close yourself in your apartment and have your productive period, or go to co-work, go to a cafe. But when you want to relax, there is always social opportunities waiting.
Yeah, there's a lot, actually. There's always something going on. The groups, the Telegram and the WhatsApp and the Signal groups here are very, very active. It's amazing, really.
Right, it's a very dynamic community of people here, because like there are residents like me, let's say there is 50 of us, and we already know each other. Sometimes we get bored of each other, we sometimes have to like each other, but it's a nice community of residents, right? But then on top of it, there is always another 50 people that are like you, coming for a month or coming for a week or weekend, and this is like a rotating circle with different speeds of community, which makes it very dynamic, right? There is always new people, there is always people like me who are here, who you can ask questions, how can I get to an airport or whatever. And it also attracts certain type of people, right? Because there can be people visiting Prospera, and there are, who are expecting the grocery, and they're like, oh, I don't like Prospera, you know, because there is no grocery. Okay, that's fine. But there is another type of people who come and see this as an opportunity, and like, oh, maybe I should open a grocery if there is a problem. And after time, it makes this community accrue in people with some type of builder mindset. And you can see this here, right? And we meet sometimes at the pool, right? That people are quite open to discuss, hey, what are you doing? Is there any way for us to collaborate? And I think this is a very healthy phenomena. This is what you need when you build such city. It's not an end product yet. So Prospera is also not attracting yet end users, because those end users will come and see, you know, I thought it's a hotel on the beach and it's just chill, everything is in place. No, not everything is in place there yet, but we are doing our best to make it happen in a few years.
And there's always there are always solutions to those problems currently existing as well, as what I noticed. Take the groceries thing. Yeah, the grocery store in Prospera is not very good, but there's a free bus that goes every 2 hours that goes drops you off at the supermarket and then picks you up an hour later. So actually, yeah, it's a bit more hassle. You have to get in a bus It's not a bus. It's a luxury car, basically. You get in this lovely car and it drops you off right outside the supermarket, which is about a 10-minute drive away. And you shop, and as you walk out, he pretty much is arriving on his way back. And that's just running continuously.
Yeah, so there are shuttle, public transport in a private city.
Yeah, what? But it don't cost anything. Like, well, I mean, to Prosper it does.
I don't know. Like, sometimes they're charged, sometimes they don't. I don't use it because they have a car.
They've never charged me. No, the Liberty Line, mate. The Liberty Line. I think it's paid for by Prosper, right? Because it runs on a just round and round and round and round, you know.
Yeah.
It basically connects the two sides of Prosper.
Before we get the road, right? So everybody promises the road between Old Town and New Town, Beta District and Pristine Bay. Now we need to drive around. And the road is on the way, on the road there is groceries. So yes, this Liberty Line is useful. There is some things that Prospera, look, I mentioned that Prospera try to stay as a platform of governance and like do what minimal government would do. But sometimes they need to kickstart a few things and maybe subsidize public transport, maybe be involved more in the real estate development, because otherwise there's such, you know, it takes momentum to spin this wheel, building a new city. And they are kickstarting it in such a way that some of the problems are solved. Well, market still didn't come to solve, even though there are attempts. There is something like Prospera Go, where you can rent a car for like $15 an hour or so. But some of these problems, which are probably have to be solved by operator of the zone, and Prospera as operator does a good job.
I really think one of the most important things to do to solve, here's where I would have spent more money here, is if there was a good, reasonably priced coffee shop in Doona that knocked out coffees quickly. You know, like when you walk into a coffee shop, it's an art, at the moment it's an artisan coffee shop there. Great. But like sometimes you have to queue for so long because it takes like 5 minutes to produce each coffee, you know, and stuff. And it's lovely. But I think that's a very acquired thing and it's expensive. I want to pay $3 like down here where we are, this cafe, they do a coffee in like 10 seconds, but it's just not a great coffee.
Then you can go also to the co-work and there is American filtered coffee and you can just pour yourself, right?
Right, yeah. But I'd happily support. I would get up every single morning and I would, you know, like a lot of people do this at home. You can, where I live, you can make your own coffee at home. But sometimes it's nice to walk outside, go to Costa Coffee or wherever it is and get a coffee. And it's like you setting your day off, you know.
In Bitcoin Center, coffee is only 2,000 sats. And then Tuesdays, on co-working Tuesdays, there is 50% off. So for 1,000 sats, you have a coffee. It's totally below market price. So if people think that Roatan or Prospera is expensive, go to Bitcoin Center.
Is Roatan expensive? I don't think it's expensive here, I tell you.
Roatan is quite expensive.
No, but it is, but not compared to where I live. Like when I got a week's worth of shopping, so I went to the supermarket and I got a lot of meat, a lot of vegetables. I got good, you know, I ate well for a week and it was about £80 in money, you know, which back home that wouldn't really work. And what I noticed was some things were very expensive, like meat, funny enough, here is quite expensive. I was surprised.
Well, it's an island, so UK is also an island, but...
Yeah, but are there no farms here at all making... It's a pretty big island, you know.
It wouldn't be enough for that many people here.
Okay. I know. I wasn't as shocked. And like, for example, here, the cafe, even the cafe down here, you can get a full meal for like $15, can't you? $14.
Yeah, lunch is even like $7 or so.
Right. That's pretty good.
That's great, yes.
You know, that's what you want. I'm happy to do that. You know.
Now, Prospera is already quite livable price. And the errors, the gaps that are there to be filled, like that we maybe have noticed or you just mentioned about coffee, we are leaving them there on purpose. So, you know, we want people like Tim to come and see and get his business idea. We need cafe. I will open a cafe shop. And then we have one team more who is running a coffee shop and we have a problem solved. So this is a call to action for team and listeners to come and see that Prospera is not end product, but there is opportunities to fill gaps and find your place there.
And I actually think, I don't know, a little birdie told me that the coffee shop is moving, right? That's becoming available.
Yeah, actually, the the coffee shop that is in Prospera, the Spirit Animal, right? Yeah. One, they opened a huge one. So it's like one of the Prospera business that scaled, and they have huge, the biggest coffee place now in the center of the island called Spirit Origin. And they will probably close the pilot one.
Right, let them grow. There's an opportunity. And I actually do think it's an opportunity. I think even, for example, the footfall on that place is not a huge amount, but it would be once you get the regulars. And during a conference, you make loads of money. Like there was a constant queue there during the last conference we were at. But then on a daily basis, I think if it was a cheap coffee, like a good cheap coffee, people would go there every single morning. You know, like yesterday I was coming down in the lift, I met a guy.
You should bring some Italians.
Just arrived, and he's like, hey, where can I get this, that, and the other? And I'm like, okay. Like, and I gave him the talk in the lift. You know, I only got one towel. Where can I get something to eat? And I'm like, okay, like, welcome, but like, you have to work this stuff out. Yeah, but, and it's like you say, it's an opportunity. I really do think if you're a young go-getter, you could start a coffee shop here, and you could live in a free city, and you could actually, I think you could make money. And I'm
almost... I think you still didn't choose the best example of coffee to prove that there is not enough things here. Come on, like just around here in Beta District, where let's say there is 50 of us living here, maybe 20 employees from security, etc. There is artisan coffee, there is restaurant coffee, there is co-work coffee, there is probably instant coffee in the grocery, 4 coffee options. For like 50 people around. I think on coffee, actually, we are good.
You reckon? Well, what would you put in that space then? Basically, the coffee shop currently in the Beta building, sorry, in the Duna Tower, which is where all the residences are, is basically right on this lovely level where there's an outdoor space with views of the sea. It's beautiful. What would you do then in that space instead?
What would you do to make money, or what would you do to satisfy yourself as a resident? Right, there is 3 floors, commercial floors in Duna, and none of them is actually like making business money, except for this coffee that is already moving out. There is a grocery which needs to be subsidized. There is a co-work that also is, I don't think they are operating right on the co-work business. But there is a beautiful space, there is a maker space, and none of the other places is actually filled. The other floors are waiting for businesses to come, and the fact is that there is maybe not enough yet density, right? There is the people in Duna, or the traffic here, maybe except for conferences, is not enough to sustain the artisan coffee shop, and we can see that they are moving out, right? And what I would do, a nightclub I would attend, but then, right, would you have enough people? So there is, again, like, we are coming to this chicken egg problem, and I can have ideas what I would put as a resident. I think a scooter rental would work probably here, right?
That's a good idea, yeah. Scooter rental is a great idea, actually.
There are places to hang out. There is enough places to hang out here, right? You can sit in this restaurant over there. There is people always chatting, chilling. There is co-work space, there is maker space, there is a tower terrace, there is a pool terrace. There's so many places where maybe it's a minus that there is not one town hall for the city. There is just so many of them that you need to check out if you want to hang out or meet some people. But eventually there will be those people, and eventually those town halls will be in multiple places. And same with...
But it's also worth mentioning that, and this is me literally plugging Prospera because I think this is amazing. Rents in the Duna Tower are really reasonable long term. Like, you can come here, correct me if I'm wrong, if you do a month here, a studio apartment is $650. Isn't that right?
800.
No, one bedroom. I'm pretty sure that they have a deal for nightly deal and a deal if you do a month.
But maybe they gave you even more discounted price. You need to be a famous podcaster to get 600. I think that standard price for a month is $800.
Okay, all right. For an apartment?
For a studio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Still?
Still.
$800.
Yeah. And then you get and like a 30 pool, days. And you get exactly. Gym, you get co-working space.
Exactly. It's not bad if you want to come. Like I'm at the back end of a month stay here, right? And I wholeheartedly, if you're listening to this pod and you're into free cities, you need to come and spend a month here. Get a good deal. Spend $800.
It will be hard in September because I guess places are quickly going out for the conference.
Well, yeah, I don't think you'll be able to come then. Well, maybe you can. It's going to be difficult, but I would. Here's what I'm going to do, mate. After this trip, is I'm doing 1 month a year every year now, until something else happens, because it's been so productive. And what I'm going to do is each year I'm going to pick an event. Like this year, it was Nicholas's event called Liberty Acceleration Summit. So that lasted 3 days. And I will make my 1 month happen around the time of an event like that. Not only, I mean, specifically for me, it's great because there are so many interesting people to interview here, especially during a conference. I spoke to some awesome people who I never would speak to before because they were literally coming here just for the conference. But besides that, the work ethic here, the life, I got into a really good groove where I got up at 6:30. I did a bit of gym. I had a coffee. I did some work. All day, I did some interviews, then I go back to the gym, then I come up to the pool.
Whenever I see Tim around, he's not slacking around. He's either like walking some sweaty from some probably meeting or see him at the gym or see him at the pool. Like you must be doing a really good job.
Well, no,
but you enjoy it.
Fuck yeah. But not necessarily for reasons that other people might. I think if you come here expecting Tulum, it's not the same, right? I came here, and part of the reason why it's so amazing is because at home I live with a family, a large family, and I love my family to bits. This is the first time I've spent this long away from them, the kids actually.
I thought you do it like,
I used
three times a year you drop out.
No, but I used to do a lot of travel. Now, this is a 6-week trip for me because I'm going to the States straight from here to do some other stuff. But what's great for me is I get to basically focus on my work for 30 days. All I focus on is work, and I have Zoom calls with my kids, but they don't take up my life. And I really it's really been so productive. I'm going to do it. Plus, the other way it's been productive is, and you must know this from being here, is you get into the whole Free Cities thing in such a real way. You see what's happening. You see all the problems. I remember this first time we went to El Salvador after the Bitcoin law was passed. I'd been a Bitcoiner for years, and we went to El Salvador, spent 2 months there with my family. And by the end of that 2 months, I learned more about Bitcoin than I'd learned in the previous 10 years because I was using it every day. I was trying to pay payments, and I was like, oh shit, no signal. And I learned all this stuff about what needed to be done about Bitcoin. And the same is here. You come here and you're like, holy shit, this is a startup city happening in real time.
It is. And such stays for like a month or two is something that I can see work the best for both the guest, like you enjoy your time. If you would stay a bit longer, you might be start to get maybe annoyed at some things. I had this period, and only after like 4-5 months I start, okay, refinding myself on the island.
Well, you probably got a car as well at that point.
If
you get a car quickly, then that's good. Yeah.
You know, when I came to visit it, just to visit on a second day, I bought a motorbike from Facebook Marketplace just to lock in. Okay, this might be my place. I already have a motorbike, so I will move here. And it was just much easier to move around the island and visit it and park anywhere. But it's also a good strategy for Prospera itself. It looks like this is something that works. People coming over for bit chill retreats, for Nicholas acceleration summits, or for some other events that are slowly filling up Prospera calendar. And every month there is some opportunity to come and stay for 2 weeks, usually among very interesting people, 2, 3, 4 weeks. And this is a good strategy for Prospera because it makes 100 people a month coming through. They go home, they say good, usually sometimes bad things about Prospera. They say their friends, hey, come over. Here is like this Tomek. If you are into Bitcoin, he will show you around, right? And out of these hundreds of people a month, some percentage of them will stay. And we see it. I stayed. Some other people stayed. Some percentage of them will invest, open their business. And I think this is one of the most efficient method of growth of Prospera. And it's not yet end product. It's difficult for families to make a commitment and move here and change their lives and move it to Prospera, but it's actually a perfect product to come for a month and try it out, and various nomads like you do it. And for work and travel, this is perfect because this is lots to travel around, and Roatan has a lot to offer for a month to stay and have active part and visit the island. but also for work, for the vibes that you mentioned, right? There is multiple co-working spaces, everybody is focused, you can still have chill, but if you are around people that are visiting Prospera, you usually want to get things done.
I know, I haven't seen any of the island, it's so bad. Like I would have, I don't care, I don't mind. I think next time, for example, if I'd have come here with one of my daughters or my son, we'd have been every weekend, we'd have been going out, looking around the island, going snorkeling, going to restaurants. But I didn't need to do that as a kind of like, as a single, feels like as a single bloke on his own here, I could just focus on the work. You know, I don't have to think about my family or my wife or anything, you know. And it's been great for that. I get it that everyone's reasons to come to a place like this are different. But I also agree with you that that might be the next phase of Prospera, the 1 month residencies here. It's really working. Like I've been to a few things like that in the past, like Zuzalu, for example. Not my thing, but we went there and people were staying a month and stuff. But it was like $300 a night for the hotel room or something. It's like, nah, I get it. I think it's more realistic here to do that. I think you get to come here, you get to live here, you get to see what's going on, you get to see the problems. So if you're a builder,
you shout at me when you say problems.
No, like yeah, massive problems. But you get to see the problems. So you, if you're a builder, you really get to see the opportunities here. And this is like literally the epicenter of Free Cities opportunities. Yes. Number one, this is the place. I'm not being funny. If you came here, you could dream up pretty much anything. If you want to build something, you can pretty much find the land, find the investment and build it. You know, like there's nothing stopping you at all. Gabe said it the other day. He said, if it's within the law, you can do it. No matter what it is, if it's not against the law, just come and do it. You know, and it's one of those places. It's like I'm the wrong guy to do those kind of things because I'm on a different trajectory. But I'm looking around thinking, fucking hell, entrepreneurs, get your, why aren't you here?
A middle-sized coffee place.
Yeah, oh, that one. Yeah, I'm not that bothered about that. Right, anyway, let's wrap it up. Tell me about the future over the next year. Come on, especially Orangeville.
I love talking about the future more than about the past.
Go on then.
This year we should start breaking the ground for the Orangeville and the Bitcoin district. I will have our physical location.
Sorry, before you go on, where is it? Where's the ground for it?
It's there on the way between those two districts where the promised road connecting two districts, Beta and Pristine Bay. There is a small piece of land that also is Prospera.
Is that bit that sticks Zeta out from the beach?
Yes.
All right. So you'll have beachfront on it as well?
No, we are 300 meters away from the beach climbing up the hill.
Nice.
I'll show you.
And at the moment, can you get there across Prospera's land? Or do you have to go along the beach and up kind of thing?
No, you can go on the road. It's public, but it's not on Prospera land.
And is that the one that goes, if you carry on past the beach building?
Yes.
I've never been down there, actually.
Oh, you need to take a walk. It's a very beautiful piece of land.
And can you walk? Okay, I will.
You can walk. You can walk between two districts of Prospera, and many people do for work or for diving, or we go there for pickleball. It's like 15 minutes walk, but you cannot do it by car or by motorbike.
Right. Okay. Sorry. Carry on. The future. So you've got this. You've got the land sorted. You've got the investment sorted. You're going to break ground this year.
That's an optimistic plan. Hopefully it happens. We are also getting deeper into some events that we want to organize. Of course, the Beach Chills will continue as a quarterly retreats, but the bigger one in the middle of August, we are doing a hackathon, Bitcoin Vibe Camp. So it's a week of workshops, pitches, and networking between developers who want to integrate Bitcoin and AI, and also beginner developers who want to learn Vibe coding. We are bringing some experts in field and aim towards like 50 to 100 developers to come and spend a week with us here. We have some prizes for the hackathon. Then after that, we organize poker. So we want to go deeper into poker because it's also a nice funneling of certain profile of Bitcoiners that might be a bit more ready towards moving here or investing here. And the hackathon is also one of the steps in the long-term goal of building a venture fund here. There is enough, it's again connecting the dots, but in Ratan there is enough of capital interested in investing in startups. I have enough of network of Bitcoin startup projects, but also VCs. There is Prospera, which is perfect place to incorporate your business, to teach how to register a business, how to grow it. It's a hub of Bitcoiners and various entrepreneurs and investors. So we can connect these dots into making a nice Bitcoin venture fund. And we are looking for our niche. One of those is games. And hackathon is also the step that we want to experiment towards building this VC.
Do you know about that project that you know Gigi?
Yeah,
he's doing on Madeira.
Yes,
so that you've just described that in a way. I love that thing. I'd love to go out there.
We are like many Bitcoiners inspired by Sovereign Engineering Cohort, and they are doing. They had six, I believe, seminars on Madeira, not only about Bitcoin but about building technology for freedom, and we are actually talking about bringing them here. They are looking to have a pilot program somewhere outside of Madeira. It will happen probably early next year. So we are still kind of competing with.
Dude, I am coming some for other that locations. One. You saved me a spot for that. I would love to go there.
We are in touch with them. Some of them might come in August, but they organize also Bitcoin Plus in Madeira later in August this year. So might be not super available, but I really want it to happen. I want to bring biggest Bitcoin hackathons to come over. So we're talking with them, with Gigi, Sovereign Engineering, with Bitcoin Plus. So Bitcoin Plus is probably the biggest today traveling coalition of hackathons that they will do also in Madeira. Eventually they will come to Roatan. We are doing our Vibe Camp with AmityH, with Blink, with our partners. But I think that, as we mentioned, that Prospera is perfect for and Roatan for retreats, for medium-term stays. So we want to also build on that and not only bring those traveling events, like Bitcoin Plus is a traveling event, or move some project like Sovereign Engineering and open the pilot here. But we try to bring teams for the retreats. If there is any one of listeners who is working for a company that does out retreats and have an annual meeting, this is a perfect place to do it. You can meet your folks from your company, you know, 20 of you, stay here, have a co-working experience, meet us in Prospera, we'll arrange you some time on visiting island. So this is also one of the events, types of events that we are targeting towards doing the district. And I can see that so far this works very well, building the district on the community layer, and now we are landing physically.
And of course, don't forget, the Free Cities Conference is here.
And Free Cities is right after Bitcoin Vibe Camp in August, then Poker Tournament end of August, and Free Cities is the beginning of September. So we thought of that, planning the Prospera calendar. It's going to be busier every year.
Wow. I'm only doing 10 days during... I'm only coming for 10 days during the Free Cities.
Did you book? You should have booked already.
Oh, we block booked it. We're, you know, like the people working there as well. Mm. Funnily enough, they were talking about putting everyone over in the on the other side, and I said, absolutely not. I had a call with them the other day. I said, you've got to put us lot, not me. I already said I want to be in the Duna Tower, but you've got to put everyone in the Duna Tower because then you can walk to the venue in 5 minutes.
It's impossible. You don't have enough spare apartments.
No, everyone who is working on the project, I mean. Sure, I mean, you can't fit everyone in for the conference, but so be it.
Which is a good sign, and we can see that there is already sometimes oversaturation in Prospera, especially considering accommodation, and when people like come for Free Cities Conference, they need to be located elsewhere, because physically there is just not enough spaces in the ZEDA, and that's why also we are building.
Yeah.
More places, more houses. The demand is there.
I wish I was 20 years, so bright, 20 yeah. years long, younger. No, I'm actually jealous of you. No, I'm not that. I'm jealous of you because I had a great 30s, mate. My 30s were fucking brilliant.
And you made it to your 40s.
50s.
You made 54. It. I haven't made it yet. So I'm jealous that...
No, but that's... But I would do the whole thing again and I would be here. If I was, because in my 30s as well, I was single. I had a long-term relationship that I got out of, basically. And I went traveling, and it was the best. I mean, I was, like I say, it's when you're your most powerful as a man. You've got money, you've got options, you can, you know, you're confident because you know who you are. I would be here building shit, mate, 100%. I'd even be building it with my hands. Bricks and mortar, building buildings and stuff. It's so exciting. I will come back. When my kids get to a certain age, I will come back and I will start doing it. When they no longer need me around, when they're a bit older, I'm going to be, maybe not in Prosperity, it'll probably be built by then, but I'm going to do it, mate.
There may be other Zeddes in Roatan.
Oh, there'll be Zeddes all over the place, mate. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, look, it's great talking to you. I'm more bullish than even after I spoke to Gabe the other day, and he made me really bullish about the place.
But. And there is more, even more such projects like mine who are, you know, entrepreneurs bringing more people and planning
that?
For
what's that?
No, just more like Darien Nomad, Nomad X, Noma Collective, Bitcoin District, Fashion District. There is like various initiatives that are, that their purpose is to bring more people and more things happen in Prospera, and it's already, we can see the calendar for the next year is just getting busier.
And there's that guy Ivan, who I never met, the guy I asked you about. He's not here at the moment. He's building another.
Yeah, he's having another real estate project. There is no like community or like underlying Bitcoin philosophy or something. It's a strictly real estate project, but it's happening. They secured funds for 5 towers. And I think over 50 small apartments for short-term rental will be available. So such things as free cities can be even bigger.
Bang. You heard it here first. Right. Tomek, thanks, mate. Nice talking to you.
Thank
nice
you,
been
sir.
Hanging out on and off over the last month as well. I'm leaving on Tuesday back for the conference, though.
Hopefully the next few days we can still hang out a bit.
Oh, yeah, we are. This the Bitchill. Yeah, definitely. Bitchill. Definitely. I've got interviews today and tomorrow, and one with Eric on Monday, but that's
nice.
It. So I'm free at the weekend. Anyway, it's great talking to you. Thanks for spreading the love, and I love what you're doing.
Likewise, I'm glad and humbled to be at this podcast.
Right, you made it to the end of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and assume that you got some value out of this episode. If you want to help the show, please follow or subscribe right now. It takes only 2 seconds and it massively helps. If you've got another 30 seconds, well, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Honest reviews apparently are the single best way to help new listeners find us. If you want more, you can get bonus episodes and early access to episodes on fountain.fm for the price of one coffee for a whole month. Or you can support the mission by streaming sats on any of the value for value platforms, or use the Bitcoin and fiat donation links in the show notes. Every contribution to the show makes a real difference. Believe me. And one more thing, if you know someone who'd love this episode, share it directly with them. That personal share beats every algorithm in the book. All the links, the community, and the newsletter are in the show notes. And jump on over to freecities.fm for a deep dive into all the episodes with descriptions and more. That's the new Free Cities podcast website, freecities.fm. Have a good week and see you next time.